This is ESPN Chicago, WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago,
a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Brought to you by Nancy's Pizza. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
We're back. It is the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. You know, I had this dream that we were not on the air last year when Connor Bedard was a rookie and was on his way
to... That was a nightmare. It was a nightmare, not a dream.
But we did it.
Just pretend we did it.
Look, their shows, Curb Your Enthusiasm, took 3 years off between seasons. So the Hockey Show took a little bit of a hiatus.
Mad Men took a long break. We're also an artistic show like that.
We had a writer's strike. Cultural I don't know if you relevance. Know that, but yeah. this entire show is scripted.
I was on strike.
And Chief had a contract dispute that finally, like Larry David, when Larry says it's ready to go to do Curb, you called me last week. You and Zetterman came to an agreement, and here we frickin' are.
Here we are.
How are you, bud?
I'm as good as I can be. As good as I can be.
What does that mean?
Given the state of things in Chicago sports, I'm as good as I can be.
You know, I was listening to Caleb Williams today, I was thinking about some of the growing pains he's going through and what Connor Bedard is. And I wonder, like, if these two phenoms, these two number one overall picks, could sit down, what kind of conversation would they have with each other as far as, you know, the expectations they have? Mm-hmm. I mean, again, 19, and I'm assuming Caleb's 22, 23?
I think he's 22.
22. Yeah. So those are 3 years where a lot of development happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's not apples to apples by any means, but I think Bedard he's not scoring the way he wants to, but he is racking up the points.
Yeah, I mean, the puck just has to go in the back of the net. And for him, the goals will come as long as you're playing the right way, which we've seen a couple of moments tonight, because I have this debate in my head every time I watch him. And I'm like, would they just be better if we had a guy on State Street saying fire Eberflus? I agree, we got it. But with him, it's just like, I just want to see him play in the right way, because I have this fear that maybe he's not best suited to be a center, and it's let's just let him be Nikita Kucherov on the wing, and that would be fine with me too.
Is that because of his struggles at the faceoff dot, or
it's
is
a little
it
stuff
more
defensively? And it's like, you know, if he's this, you know, all-world offensive talent, what's the way to absolutely maximize that? And maybe it's taken some of the defensive stuff off of his plate. So that's a thought that I have. I'm not, like, convinced one way or the other. But saw in the first period tonight, he's making effective plays down low in the zone defensively. So he's doing, you know, he's doing the right things. He's not coughing the puck up quite as much as he did last year. So there's some growth and development there. I'm not worried about Connor Bedard.
No, I'm not worried about him either. I am worried about whether or not they're going to find the right line for him this year. Because, again, just like you're trying to find the right offensive coordinator and play caller for Caleb and that offense, same thing goes with the development of 98.
Totally.
Last year, look, he made Kershaw better, but on a good team, those two would not be on the same line.
Correct. Yeah.
So, I thought Bertuzzi might be there. He still might.
He's gotten some reps there.
Ryan Donato's been the story of the season so far, just out of the surprise category. Mm-hmm. He's not a long-term fit there, but...
No, but it's like, you know, Bedard, I always think this about guys that have such high hockey IQ, like Bedard. You need other smart players to play with that can kind of see the ice and think the game the way that you can. Donato has that. Like, he is a smart, a Harvard guy. Like, he's a smart hockey player. He's always been effective. There's a reason why he's been, you know, he's not super athletically gifted, but he's managed to carve
out. Son of a coach, you know.
He's carved out a long NHL career here, and, you know, he's been productive on that line. I kind of feel similar about Kurashev. Like, Kurashev has some deficiencies, but he's smart and he's responsible, and so they're going to have with those two. And that, I think that was kind of the idea with Teravainen. Teravainen's so good defensively that, you know, maybe you're going to create more turnovers and you'll have more kicks at the can offensively, as Bedard looked like he might have been limping off there a little bit. It looked like he was gingerly approaching the bench, that left leg up. So hopefully that's nothing. I think he's probably fine. He's totally fine. Everything's fine.
Everything's okay.
Everything's fine.
The return of the hockey show, it is here. The return of Patrick Kane on the west side, he is there. The hated Detroit Red Wings have a 1-0 lead. They just dropped the puck in the second period. Former Blackhawk Alex DeBrincat had the lamplighter in the first period. And it was a play that was originally started by 88 in the defensive zone or neutral zone and got it to Larkin, and then it ends up on the stick of DeBrincat with like
1.5
to go. So 1-0 bad, guys. We'll keep you posted on that. We want to thank our new sponsor, Nancy's Pizza.
Nancy's. Fantastic.
So we're going to be getting that going on Wednesday nights in here. Every Wednesday night, 8 to 9 throughout the season. Our number is 312-332-3776. You can watch us on Twitch. twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. And of course, you can always listen on the ESPN Chicago app. All right, so we have the return of Patty Kane. He is a favorite of both of ours. And I got to
That's putting it lightly.
Lightly. Yeah. I finally feel like he is beginning to emerge from the Blackhawks' shadow, so to speak. After 16 amazing years, he gets traded to the Rangers, plays a handful of games, hurt with the hip, goes through a, I don't say revolutionary, but a surgery that has not been done very often to professional athletes.
And not usually done in America.
Yeah.
Like I think Kobe might have had something similar, a similar technique where it's like guys usually have to go to Germany. I don't know if he did or not. But, yeah, it's a very serious injury that guys typically...
He had done in New York.
Yeah.
He rehab and trained in Toronto that year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, finally found his home in Detroit. I thought as the year progressed, he looked great. Like, he was trying to single-handedly carry that team to the playoffs.
He almost did it.
He did.
He almost did it.
Did you find yourself, like, on ESPN Plus watching Red Wing games a lot last year because you wanted to keep tabs on him?
I'm embarrassed to say how many Red Wings games I watched last year. So, yes. It is one of those things where, like, I do feel, like, blessed that I was in my 20s when he was here. They're winning all the time. But if there's some alternate universe where the Flyers took him and they won the lottery that year in 07. He's the type of player I just love watching him play.
Yes.
He's so smart. He controls the game even when he doesn't necessarily have to have the puck. Like, he's just, his presence in the offensive zone creates space. So yeah, like, I, no matter where he played his whole career, I think he's a guy that I would gravitate to no matter what. But you know, last year, I watch more Red Wings than I care to admit.
We will play his infamous return to the United Center on Chris Chelios jersey retirement night coming up in our next segment, which to me, it's one of the best calls of the NHL season, listening to the Red Wing broadcast and how that was done. More on him coming up, but let's talk about what you've seen thus far from this Blackhawks team. Because where were your expectations? It's year three of the rebuild. Is that the number you're looking at?
Yeah, it depends on when you start the clock. Because
I started the clock when you traded guys like Hagel.
Okay.
Said goodbye to DeBrincat.
Then yes.
Yes.
And then we're in year three. Because there is, in my head, you can distinguish between you get a teardown year and then a rebuild year. So I kind of think that year where they moved on from Strom, Hagel, DeBrincat, that all kind of happened between that deadline. So maybe even like, and then the next year they had the full year of Kane.
Right.
So it's almost like, was that the first year or was it before? So yeah, we're in probably year two or three, two and a half of the rebuild. And heading into the year, and I really, I thought they had, Kyle Davidson had a good summer. I really did. I liked the Teravainen signing. I was surprised by the Bertuzzi signing.
Were you surprised? Because Bertuzzi's the first player that he gave term to, mm-hmm. and who's not like one of those 35-year-old, like, you know, correct. He's right around that 29, 30 years of age. And so it was the first Kyle signing that was not a free agent who was in the twilight of his career.
So Teravainen and Bertuzzi were the two guys that you gave enough term to where you hope that they're on the team when the team is good again. That's kind of how I looked at it. And ideally, like, those guys have been getting a lot of top 6 minutes, although it's been fluid, especially for Bertuzzi. It does feel like, well, you would hope that in year, you know, when the team is good again, those guys are third line guys. And Bedard is back out there, so crisis averted.
Okay.
I liked the summer. I didn't fully I was surprised by a lot of the defenders that they signed, the defensemen they signed as well, like TJ Brody and Alec Martinez. I had heard somewhere that Alec Martinez was planning on retiring, and then Kyle called him and was like, "What if I give you $4 million?" He's like, "I'll be there. I'll see you at camp." So it's, you know, they have a lot of guys where they're trying to, almost similar to what they did last year, where they brought in these veterans who are going to help with the culture. And obviously last year that didn't really materialize the way that they had envisioned because
it was Foligno. I mean, I'm just talking about the leadership.
And Corey Perry
who was gone.
Yeah, which was disaster. So, right. I think they did a better job of identifying the right types of guys. Obviously, Foligno did a good job of that. They awarded him with the captaincy. But I really like Pat Maroon. I've liked Pat Maroon as a player way more than I anticipated.
I could not agree with you more.
Yeah,
when we see him, we've certainly seen him a lot in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're like, okay, he's perfect for playoffs, whatever. But then you don't realize how good his hands are and the simple plays he makes, zone to zone, chip passes,
sense.
Just it's off the charts.
Yeah.
And he's another guy that Foligno has leaned on. Like, I want to say that this team is being self-coached, but the veterans are keeping some of the younger guys in line. There were many games last year, and we've seen it already this year, where they've taken off a period, a half a period, and you can't just have one voice telling everybody how we want to play and how we're going to, you know, work hard to be in games. I mean, this team has to work harder than the team they're playing if they want to have any success, unless they're playing San Jose, Anaheim, or a handful of teams.
I mean, but it's like the old Herb Brooks, like, you're not good enough. You're not talented enough to win on talent alone.
Right.
So you have to do it. You have to do things the right way. And it's not only is it effort, but it's using your head too. And I have a friend of mine who used to coach at Cornell and Michigan, and he put out this tweet that highlighted something that drove me insane, where you're 36 seconds into a shift, the Blackhawks, and I think it was Taylor Hall and his line, Mikheyev maybe, and 36 seconds, they've been in their defensive zone, they get the puck out, and they chip it into the corner. And it was like, all right, that you are supposed to change that. But the puck was finally in the offensive zone. They all go forecheck. They don't win the battles. Puck goes the other way. They're gassed. They can't get back. And the puck's in the back of their net. When it's like, just chip it in and get off. Like that. It's those little details to the game that for this team will make a difference. Like, that is the difference between winning and losing for a team like this, because it's like, we gave up a goal. Well, you're not Colorado, so you're not going to be able to just pump in goals and make up for it later in the game. So you have to be very structured, and I think that has improved slightly this year over last year. And I think you're right. I think it has a lot to do with the veterans. I'm not done talking about Big Rig either.
Because
I think he's getting a tune out of Lucas Reichel more than anybody else.
That's a great point. We'll get into that on the other side. The Lucas Reichel looks like he has finally heard the message, received it, and now he's implementing it. Mm-hmm. And he's been, over the last couple of weeks, one of the big surprises as far as, look, we all thought he had it in him.
He's very toolsy.
And we saw it in Rockford, mm-hmm. but we hadn't seen it other than a 20-game stretch two seasons ago.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah.
You know?
And 20 games might be generous.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a 20-game stretch where maybe 12 are good.
Yeah.
So I think that's right. We'll get into that. And Patrick Kane's return to the United Center. It comes less than a year from one of the most memorable games where Blackhawks fans actually cheered for a hated Red Wing. That is next. It's the Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Nancy's Pizza on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show. When you're at home, don't miss Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
And Kurashev on Kane. Larkin goes for a change. Bedard brings it to center. DeBrincat is back. Drop back. Jones. Jones right in. Save by Marie. Rebound save. Look out here.
Look at this.
Wide
open. Look at this.
Up center ice. It's Patrick Kane in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
Kane with the overtime winner. The Red Wings win it 3-2. The story is complete.
There are homecomings, and then there's that. Patrick Kane. Patrick Timothy Kane on the west side, taking a little luster away from Chris Chelios, his number seven, going to the rafters. Just a storybook ending of winning a game that, you know, they had held him in check pretty much most of the night, and he ends up coming through with a breakaway in overtime. And, Chief, you were there, right?
Yep.
I mean, you've never been in that building where...
Brother, I would not miss that game.
No, of course not. Yeah. Where 20,000 would cheer for a member of the opposition. But that's what they did.
But he's one of our own.
He is.
He's ours. He's ours. He's wearing their sweater now, but yeah. He's ours. And I think, you know, that was the first time he had been back. Everyone wanted to show him the love. If I was there tonight, I would have given him another standing ovation tonight as they introduced him. He's the greatest Blackhawk I've ever seen. I think there's an argument to say that he's the greatest American player of all time. He's the greatest Blackhawk of all time. He should still be playing here if it were up to me. But that moment, it has to be one of my favorite, most memorable moments going to the United Center, even with all the playoffs and everything that I got to experience there. It was incredible. And it's like when the puck leaked out to him and he got it at center ice.
From DeBrincat, of course.
From DeBrincat. You knew. Like, there was no doubt that puck was going in.
He checked his shoulder, saw he was all alone. Yeah.
And you could tell, like, he was reading the play. Like, he knew, like, if the Hawks don't score here, it's going to be a breakaway the other way. And sure enough, he got it and buried it, and the arena exploded. Like, nobody was sad for a second.
No.
Dylan Larkin just scores again, 2-1 Wings. But no one was sad for a second that Kane scored. It was instant applause, then, like, should we have done that? And then an applause again. Because it's like, absolutely, we should. He's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of player, and it was a big moment for him. And I love the way that Chelios kind of shouted him out and toasted him.
It was fantastic.
It was perfect. It was all class by Chelios, and it was a perfect night. It was a perfect night, and I will never forget it.
So Patrick and the Wings, on that occasion, they had a game the night before, so they came in late, didn't have a morning skate. At that point of the season, you know, you're focusing on points,
yeah,
especially them.
Day. Yeah.
So today was the first time where things were slowed down a little bit. Mm-hmm. He got in yesterday with the team after they practiced in Detroit, and, you know, he still lives here in the off season, so he's got a place downtown. He was there with Amanda, with PK3. And the family, and they just kind of chilled and, caught up.
Yep.
And then to see him this morning at the United Center, and they all walk in through the loading dock. They all put their car, you know, there and make their way in. And I just thought of, you know, to come in a bus must be so weird for him.
Yeah.
And to walk in there and have all these memories, all these morning skates, all these unbelievable playoff games, and what you've seen and what you've witnessed in that building, and then to come in and, you know, you make the hard right into the visitors' locker room, which is about one-fifth the size of the home dressing room, and it's just it's got to be surreal to have all those memories, and then now you're kind of you finally have turned the page and you've begun the post-Blackhawk chapter.
I hope he hasn't turned the page. I haven't turned the page. I'm still like, well, I said, he's still my guy. He's still our guy. But I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't rooting for the Wings to make the playoffs last year. I just wanted to keep watching him play. So they came up just a tad short. But yeah, that has to be almost surreal. Because if he didn't get it last year, and then last year was the huge production with all the Chelios stuff pregame. So you saw him sitting on the bench there watching Chelios do his hour of open mic before the game. But to have like a normal routine where you're just a normal road game for him now must have been so weird.
All right. So did you listen to the Waddle and Sylvie show on the way in today?
I did not.
Okay. So, we are the hockey show. They're also the hockey show.
They
call them like the Ohio State, the hockey show. When you want to talk pucks, you certainly turn to Waddle and Sylvie.
Obviously.
And obviously their producer, Tyler Aki, who I used to claim is an alum from the hockey show. But after I heard Aki's A-list today, that's over.
Why? What do you say?
Okay, so...
Because I'm a big Tyler Aki guy.
As am I.
Yeah, I was happy to see him today when I walked in.
You tell me, after you hear what one of his questions were in Aki's A-list,
okay,
if you still have him on that pedestal. Taking into account the sports they play, who is more meaningful to Chicago sports fans? Kyle Hendricks, who signed with another team today and officially ended his Cubdom, or Patrick Kane? Even Sylvie. Who is president of the Kyle Hendricks. And I love Kyle.
Me too. I love
me some Kyle. I love his dad.
Kyle's a top five Cub for me ever.
He is fantastic.
Yeah.
Nothing against him, but it's not... This is not... You can't even have this conversation, can
Tyler,
you?
Tyler, listen to me.
Tyler.
That's insane. That is insane. Kyle Hendricks had a great run. I was almost called him Mr. Cub. Somebody already has that nickname. But he was great for that decade plus that he was here.
Right?
The professor, right? He's a guy who got the absolute most out of his ability. And every time you thought he was washed, he would go on the DL for a bit, come back in June, and all of a sudden, he's got a sub-3 ERA again.
He was lights out at Wrigley.
Oh, he was great.
Big in the NLCS against the Dodgers.
So clutch. And there's a reason why he would get the ball game one. And then in game seven. So he was so clutch, a guy you could rely on. He is not Patrick Kane. Patrick Kane saved this hockey market. Patrick Kane, the Forbes always does like their franchise valuations. Yeah. Patrick Kane legitimately probably added $3 billion to the Blackhawks' bottom line in terms of valuation. So
that might be a bit of a stretch. But I don't.
What do you think they would sell for?
I actually heard the other. I want to say they're in the $1.7 billion. That's what they're. I think that they're
I'm
worth.
I'm going to pull it up right now.
I could be wrong
because it says they're worth $2.45 billion.
Okay.
I'm going to give Patrick Kane $1.5 billion is my new number. He's worth $1.5 billion to the Blackhawks.
Chief math, everybody.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, if they don't win that lottery and they never really turn it around, then they were the deadest franchise there ever was. If they never win, even if they had been able to surround Taves, who was already there pre-Kane, and they had good players, they're probably making the playoffs a lot. You're probably not getting Marian Hossa. You're probably not getting Brian Campbell. You're going to be like a very good – you're going to be the Minnesota Wild of that run, where you're a very good team. You make the playoffs every year, but you're not winning three cups. So Patrick Kane, he added $1.5 billion to the valuation, official. You can check that. And – the three cups and all the memories and all the kids that play hockey.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey,
Generations of wealth coming from and money coming from Patrick Kane.
I got to Chicago in 2004 and hockey was dead.
Yeah.
You'd go to the United Center. There were 5,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to say you could pull Tommy Hawk over like you were at Chuck E. Cheese and like, hey, can you make it a little... A balloon animal for my son.
And they had Sharpie and Bolin and those guys giving away tickets on the L.
Yes. So
please watch our sport.
It was dead.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, youth hockey was not in a good space either.
Yeah.
There are so many young boys and girls who picked up the game because of those three cups in mm-hmm. 6 years, and primarily because some of the players that they fell in love with, like Taves, like Sharp, like Jalmerson, Keith, mm-hmm. Seabrook. But at the top of the list is Patrick Kane. And to this day, Chief, when you watch the NHL draft, and we're talking 18-year-olds, and they say, who's your favorite NHL player? They're still saying Patrick Kane in 2024, which you talk about lasting power. Usually you move on to the Matthews and, you know, the Hughes, like you, Makar, you change because that's what you're watching.
But,
and that's not the case. They're still pointing out Patrick Kane as the reason why they fell in love with the sport.
I also feel like he changed the way the game was played, which is very few players can say that across all of sports. Like Jordan did that. I think the influx of skill that we've seen in the draft the last 5 years in this league, with the way guys can manipulate the puck, and the skill level has gone up significantly. And I think that sort of evolution of the game started with the way that Patrick Kane played. And you listed off a ton of great players there. He had an element of personality to him,
yes.
too. The heartbreaker, Showtime, the ear when he was playing against Matthews. Listening to the crowd. All like he was a star's star, and a guy that would give you routinely moments to get up out of your seat. The dangles through the neutral zone, the no-look passes, the spinoramas. He was electric every time.
The flair for the dramatic. I can point to me, the most important game of the Stanley Cup playoff run was the game four at the United Center against Nashville 2010. Okay, when Hossa is in the box, they're shorthanded, and Kane scores the equalizer.
Hold the goalie. Yep.
And then they go to overtime, and Hossa gets the game winner and his greatest celly ever. But, like, you look at that. You look at the overtime clincher against Los Angeles, the heartbreaker.
The Philly game winner.
The Philly game 10.
When you, like, just go to YouTube and type up Patrick Kane playoff highlights, the video is like 20 minutes
long. Pack a lunch.
Yeah, it's like 20 minutes
long. Because you're
going
to be there for a while.
And he had so many moments like that.
How about his last game at the United Center? It was the near buzzer beater.
The last month?
Oh, yeah, that's true, too.
That whole month, he was just killing everybody.
But against Vegas,
yes.
We thought he had a buzzer beater to end his career, and it was off by, like, 0.7 seconds or something like that.
That goal counted.
I think it did.
It's
the greatest goal in Blackhawks history that didn't count.
Yes, and it was like, we were watching the game tonight, and this is like the Chief scorebook, where he started that play and the official scorebook didn't give him the assist. He gets that assist.
Yes.
And he also gets that goal. And I think they had a game. They went like in that February before they traded him. They went 4-0. And I think he went on a run where he had like 10 points in those four games. He had a hat trick in one of the games. He was just unbelievable. And it was like another thing where it's like, because if you remember, and that was another thing where he would find like these little moments of motivation. Where people are saying he's washed, he's this, he's that. He's like, you think I'm washed? You know, you got the Rangers, I want to go to you. You go out and get Tarasenko instead of me. You know, ultimately, obviously, he went there. But then he's like, I'll show you.
Right.
And he just exploded. For the last four home games he had at the United Center, he was the best player for either team in all four of those games.
I know if you could write the ending, you would have 88 back in a Blackhawks sweater at some point here.
Yeah.
Realistically, and again, you have contacts within the organization, no different people, trying to pull your fandom out of the equation for a minute. Do you think Patrick Kane ever has a chance to finish? Not the old, he's signing for a day and retiring.
No, like he plays
legitimately
a full year.
Playing time.
I think the ship has sailed. I don't think it's... I've never been, you're right, I do talk to different people in the organization. I've never been able to get a straight answer about it. And it's like it can't be an on-ice thing. And it can't be an off-ice thing because he has been the consummate teammate bringing along young players. People would leak things to me and say things to me about like, he's very demanding on his teammates, which I think is true and I think is good. So I was like, man, maybe this guy was just like a jerk.
No.
I would text. I texted a few guys who are young guys who have moved on to other teams. And it's like, was he just like the worst? They're like, no, we love him. Everybody loves him. So, but I don't really know. I've met him, but I don't have like a personal relationship with him. So I don't really know. So I asked like his former teammates that were not a part of those championship teams if there was something off there with him. And they universally were like, he's the best. We love him.
All I can say, I mean, I had an up close and personal look at his career over the 16 years and the last 11 from on a daily basis, and I thought he was an amazing asset to younger players.
Yes.
The Nick Schmaltzes, the Alex DeBrinkets, the Dylan Stromes,
Ryan Hartman, Kirby Doc.
Would invite them.
Vinny Hinostroza, all those guys
down to Florida.
Yep.
And they would go to their Daryl Belfry camp.
Yep.
And he would, I don't know if he'd pay for it, but it was certainly.
He did.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like, you know, and he would pick guys that possibly were going to be on his line and were like, hey, do you want to do this? Yep. And this is before training camp or whatever. And I mean, I know a couple guys that turned him down. And that really, most everybody said, yes, I'm in. And when somebody did, it changed my view of how much better they wanted to get. I'm like, you don't love the game as much as he does.
Well, that was, I don't want to spill the beans on this, but there was a guy who got traded, and Kaner like kind of freaked. He's like, do you even like hockey?
Yeah,
because he's freaked out on him in the locker room, like just so disappointed in his work ethic. And they moved him out like not that long after that. So Kane, he is demanding, but he is also the best. And there are so many times where they had the you know, the prospect camp going on at Fifth Third, and then they have the second sheet, and you'd go over to the second sheet, and it was just him and DeBrinket, and then him and DeBrinket and a goalie, and just working on one timers and skills, and you know, different zone entry skill, you know, stick handling around the blue line, and it was like these guys are working their butts off. At, you know, at 11 a.m. on a Wednesday in August or July, and because they're that dedicated and they love it, and that's why Kane always came back every year. He was always a little bit better. Like he had a new
wrinkle, a new worked trick on my edge work.
He had something else in his locker every year.
Yeah, it's so. On the other side, I want to talk to you the only other Blackhawk that I can remember that loves the game like Patrick Kane. Is somebody that we're infatuated with here in Chicago and hopefully lives up to, let's say, half of the expectations. That's coming up next. It's The Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Nancy's Pizza. It's on ESPN 1000.
The Hockey Show.
Pat Boyle hosts Chicago's only show dedicated to hockey fans.
The Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
It's The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. We're brought to you by Nancy's Pizza. We're back after a year and change hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, we got a little rust, you know, 43 minutes in. It's just starting to get the wind back a little bit, but yeah. We'll get there.
We should have done a preseason.
Yeah,
yeah.
We should have.
Yeah.
For some reason, we decided to start in early November, and we're not complaining.
But we're back.
Right now, it's after 40 minutes at the United Center. The Red Wings have a 2-1 lead. Nick Foligno, the lone goal for the Blackhawks. Bertuzzi got his first assist along with Murphy. Larkin and DeBrinket, the goal scorers for Detroit. I talked to you about the love that Patrick Kane has for this game. And we had one of our callers drop off, sir. If you've... You got to call. Do it now.
312-332-3776.
There you go.
I have that memorized from just being in the car.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've got it down.
Yeah.
Sitting down with Connor Bedard on a handful of occasions now in his year plus here, I hear it. I see it. The love for the game is that.
Yeah.
And it's so... evident to me that there are great players, they're superstars, there are highly talented pros, but when you mix the competitive nature with the love for the game and the talent, that's when you get the phenom.
Yep.
And I think that's what we have in Bedard. Now, look, I know there's a lot of people that are a little upset that this is game 14 and he's got 3 goals and 9 assists, 12 points in 13 games. A point per game guy
at 19
is usually good enough to get into the Hall of Fame, yep, depending on how many years, yep, you play. But where's your concern with the goal scoring? Is it because he puts pressure on himself? Because I do see that.
Mm-hmm.
He's hard on himself.
He is hard on himself, and I do think there's an element of he does have so much pressure on him and so much pressure to reform, but it's not like he's playing bad. The goal drought, actually, if you look, it goes back into the end of last year, too. I think at one point he was like 3 goals in his last 24 games or something like that. So, but the goals will come. It's like once he breaks the dam, I think they're going to come in bunches. But I think it's almost, you saw him play in junior, you saw him play in the World Junior, he had all the records, all the goals. He might just be more of a playmaker, which is fine, as opposed to like an Austin Matthews who's going to get 40 to 50 goals a year. Like, you can mark your calendar with it, just put it down, like, it's in there. Bedard might get to 100 points a different way. And if he is more of a playmaker, well, then he needs some guys who can finish for him, too. And they need guys that will create space. So, been doing a lot of line juggling. He is 19. I think he's going to be fine. Like I said, I am not convinced that his best position ultimately will be a center. Maybe if he's playing right wing or left wing in a year or two with a big body type of other winger or center, then there's more space and he starts pumping in 40. But he's doing fine.
I look at his game and I thought last year was finding out what he'd been able to do his entire NHL career. And he had always been the best player on the ice. That obviously changed last year when he comes to the National Hockey League and the passes that he was used to making in Regina and making with Team Canada and whatnot, you can't make anymore. So you have to almost, you know, your body and your mind has always said, I can do this, I can do this. There are no limits to what, yeah, I can do. The time and speed and everything about that changes about the game is an adjustment for these guys. And I think you've seen that. I think that's why his plus minus he came into tonight's game minus one.
Yeah, like it was atrocious.
Yeah.
But I do think, so when you brought him, you were comparing him to Caleb earlier, like Caleb, especially in that game against Arizona, you saw a lot of, like, you call it hero ball. And I think Connor was guilty of that a lot last year, too, where it's like, I'm going to try to weave through everybody when there's, like, a simpler, safe play. And, like,
well, stay on the ice longer shifts, whatever. Yes. You know, I've got to do it myself.
Correct.
When the check down is there.
Exactly.
When they live to fight another day, mm-hmm, just putting it in the offensive zone and making the line change,
yep,
and setting up the next line,
or even just, you know, put the puck in a good area and, right, go get it. So if you can't split the guys, you know, put it halfway up the wall and your teammate will go get it and you'll maintain possession. So there's a learning curve there, and I think as he gets better and he has better teammates, I really don't have concerns about his ability to pump in goals. Like, that's going to come. That's what he's been doing his whole life. And like you were saying, the dedication, you know, everybody has other hobbies. Like, Connor Bedard's other hobby is like roller hockey.
Yeah,
you know, so it's right, like hockey and roller hockey, the only things he cares about.
Like, he's literally at Fifth Third Arena almost like it's a 9-to-5 job every day. He is the last yeah, guy off the ice. Like, it's insane. A guy that has, I think, made a nice jump so far this year is Lucas Reichel. And yep, you see him being on that fourth line with a guy like Pat Maroon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a story written, I think it was Ben Pope, talking about on the road trip that they went up. Lucas made a great play, defensive play, during practice, and they celebrated that like it was a game,
yep,
to kind of foster and build that confidence and hope it spills into games. And I think we've seen it.
Yeah, and I think I never thought that he would be able to play in a bottom six role. He's centering the fourth line, and it's working. Yeah. And he's got, like, Big Rig, you know, Pat Maroon, like we talked about. Pat Maroon, he came into our office late in the summer, and the guys were skating together, nothing official. And he's like, yeah, we got this kid. He seems pretty good. I'm like, oh, is it Frank Nazer? He goes, no, Lucas something, Reichel? And I'm like, he's like, yeah, like he's really good. Like he's really good. I'm like, yeah, well, you know, we'll see. I haven't really seen it much in the NHL, but Maroon saw something in him there. And it does seem like Maroon has kind of taken him under his wing on that line. Like you mentioned that thing out in LA where they have the practice, he pumps him up for that. And it does seem like he's playing a little bit more free, but also responsible at the same time. So there's a good mix there, and it would be great if he could carve out a role that he is a piece of this puzzle.
All right, how long is this rebuild going to take? And it's the most often question that I field. What's going on with CHSN and Xfinity? That's next. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. It's not my fault.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. It's brought to you by Nancy's Pizza. Thanks to our producer, Kevin Zipak. Mac McMaster also helped out a little bit, too, and he'll be in the chair with us in the upcoming weeks. With Barstool Chief, I'm Pat Boyle. Final moments here on the show. Biggest question I get, when is CHSN and Xfinity going to be signed on the dotted line and a carrier? Look. Truth be told, I'm an Xfinity customer. I've been waiting, holding out hope that a deal will get done. I hear they're talking. That wasn't the case a month ago. They are talking. But it's my understanding, too, that there's going to be a direct-to-consumer app that's available next week or two. So that might make things easier. I know you decided to. You broke up with Xfinity.
I had to.
And now you're dating Fubo and
YouTube. I'm playing the field a little bit. So I tried the antenna thing. It didn't work in my building. My neighbor had the same issue. It's been very frustrating. I freaked out, but I got to the point where I was like, I just can't complain about this forever. So I just gave up. And Xfinity did email me today with my little rebate.
$9.70 or something.
Thank you for that. I'm sure that'll make a big difference.
Get a cup of coffee with that. Look, here's the teams and CHSN. They're in the business. They want more eyeballs watching. They're not. Yep. They're not trying to be selective. This is a right now. I would say that Comcast/Xfinity has a lot of the bargaining power here.
Duh.
And it hasn't worked out very well thus far. At the end of the day, if they don't want people to cut the cord, I'd like to think that they would look at the fan base of those three teams and say that we're going to piss off some people here. Mm-hmm. It might be 3 out of 10, but that's still a large portion.
There's a lot of people who are
half
angry.
The people watching television in the Chicagoland area do it through Xfinity. Half. That's a lot.
Yeah. My issue with on the Blackhawks side of things is that they weren't ready to make this move. They destroyed a broadcast crew that we loved in preparation for the move. They're trying to time up the contracts with Edzo, then they nickel and dime them, and then it's like, oh, well, you did all of that. You knew this was coming, and you still weren't ready, and it's just you guys just fumbled and dropped the ball again. So I'm furious with them, but it is what it is, and I'm a Fubo/YouTube/Verizon guy now.
To be continued next week. We are the Hockey Show. He is Barstool Chief. I'm Pat Boyle. We'll be here every Wednesday, 8 to 9, on ESPN 1000.